This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. To Ashley Christensen, a restaurant is not just a place where you sit down to eat. It's an entire concept that includes good eating and social bonding. She carefully plots an immersive experience for her diners. The restaurant space is transformed into its own work of art, gesturing back to the architecture and artifacts of historic Raleigh. Ashley runs several places to eat and drink in downtown Raleigh. Poole's Downtown Diner, Beasley's Chicken and Honey, Fox's Liquor Bar, and Chuck's are all hers. And now she's a finalist for the James Beard Award for Best Chef in the Southeast. Ashley Christensen's our guest this hour. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Frank.
Let's start with that award. Semifinalist, you have been semifinalist 3 years in a row. What does it feel like this year making the shortlist for that James Beard Award?
It feels really amazing. You know, it's such an honor to be anywhere on that list. And to make that finalist list, you know, of course you get excited for that each year. But each year I've known, you know, I'm in great company across the board. And this year was really amazing for me for the Southeast category to hear those announcements and find myself surrounded by some of my best friends in cooking and folks who I respect so much. And specifically in the Southeast category, you know, it's a list of folks who I've cooked with all over the place and I consider some of my closest friends. So really honored and really proud of everybody who's a part of it.
Well, and what's that like when you get on a list like that is, after all, competitive in a way?
Yeah.
But you're on with your friends. I mean, what's it like in the wonderful world of chefs? Is it, you know, you've got knives in your hand after all.
Yeah. You bring up a really interesting word, competitive, you know, and I think there are different ways of looking at that. And I think of myself as being in a competitive industry among a group of people who work tremendously hard to share their craft with their communities. And but when I think about like the Southeast category that I'm in and that whole award system, I don't think about it as competition. I think about it as, you know, just a celebration, I think, of really interesting chefs and most important to me, you know, community leaders, folks who are doing great work all over in their communities. And I'm sure that a lot of it has to do with cooking and making delicious food. But I think a really important large part of it is also, you know, how we, through the vehicle of food and restaurant and its place in the community, how we lead communities.
I've been trying to get my head around this as long as I've been down here and witnessing this food scene in particular. Restaurants are businesses, and they're tough businesses. They
Yes.
are tough, competitive businesses. And to stay in it, you have to do all the things a good business person does. Competition has to be chief among them. And yet what you see down here is great camaraderie among the restaurant owners and this sense of community. What is going on there? What is that balance of community, a sense of place, a sense of sharing, all at the same time you're running a very successful, difficult business? What's going on?
Sure. I can't answer that question for communities that I'm not, you know, that I haven't really engaged with, because I'm sure, you know, it's probably different in New York City to open a restaurant. I'm sure of that. I know that it's different to open a restaurant in New York City. But I think somewhere, you know, in my time in working in restaurants, leading kitchens, and now having the great pleasure and opportunity to own my own restaurants, I've started to embrace and realize that this business isn't about competing with your neighbor. It's about embracing your neighbor and complimenting your neighbor. And what we found, I think, at this point, and I feel this way about many of my contemporaries and the folks who own restaurants all over the South, and some who just, you know, run restaurants, I think that the more that we share with each other and gain confidence in what is our particular offering to a community, the better we all are. And, you know, we've set for Poole's, celebrated its five-year anniversary, which we're very proud of, December 13th of this past year. And we sit on a block with no businesses, you know, and it's very interesting. And we haven't felt particularly challenged by that, but we would love the idea of another business opening up on that block and to have restaurants and to feel like there would be a place when folks come to us and, you know, to be able to send them to places that they're looking for. And I think that's something that has really, you know, I believe it's true and here in Durham, and I know that it's true in Raleigh, that as new folks start opening up new businesses. It's just better for all of us.
It adds to it. And that's the amazing thing.
It enriches the community.
So in this kind of business ethic that includes community, let's start with pools because when you moved in there or when you decided to make it a restaurant, there was even less. The convention center wasn't finished.
Correct.
And you say that you started with the feeling of a diner.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Well, I think, you know, there's a familiarity to the idea of the American diner. And no matter what you know about a city that you're in or if you're on a street that you've never been on in a city that you live in, there's something about the idea of a diner that I believe, I know for myself, it just immediately puts you a little bit at ease and gives you the idea that you have some understanding about where you are, even if it's a concept that you've never been to or you haven't heard of some of the things on the menu or you've never met the owner or the chef. There's something just sort of appeasing about that idea. And I think that we experience that when we travel through America and we go to cities. I know that my father was a truck driver when I was a child, and he always, you know, in driving through new cities, that was where he went. You know, like the diner, there was an understanding. There was something that he knew that he would feel at home there. And so I think that when I walked in Pools the first time that it was now my project, I had no idea what I wanted to do with it, no idea what the menu would read, but I knew it would be, you know, painted on these chalkboards, and I knew that we would have the chance to come in every day and to grow through that menu and to change things a little bit every day and share new things with our community. But I knew the thing that I was sure of was how I wanted people to feel when they walked through that door.
But that's interesting because you start with initially a kind of vague vision also, although something very concrete about how you wanted people to feel. And then it would seem to me that then it's the people who fill in and take their idea of diner and embody that and actually make it happen, right?
Sure.
They say, I have permission to talk to people on the other stool because that's what you do at diners.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm going to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's been tremendously successful for us. And we've got, you know, a dining room that has almost 50 seats, but then our, you know, most prized location in the restaurant is the counter, and that's something we've really embraced. And it's a double horseshoe counter, so you don't have that experience that you often feel in a bar when you can talk just to the person next to you, and you have to lean over and sort of bend around to a point of discomfort to meet your neighbors. Whereas the horseshoe shape gives you the opportunity to see everyone who's around you. And it's amazing to us how many people make friends at that bar, and we get to hear those stories later about, we have some regular guests who have been all over the country with friends they've met sitting at that bar, which I think is really neat.
On the State of Things today, Ashley Christensen runs multiple restaurants in Raleigh and is a finalist for the James Beard Award. We will talk about how she came to get into the food industry when our conversation continues on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio, and today I'm talking to Ashley Christensen, chef and restaurant owner in Raleigh. We've been talking about the ideas behind Pools Downtown Diner, one of the establishments she owns down there. Also a finalist for the James Beard Award for Best Chef in the Southeast. So you talked about your father being a truck driver, also a beekeeper. So let's go back to the origins of Ashley Christensen and find out how you got where you are today. Kernersville, right?
Kernersville, yes, sir.
So tell us about growing up there.
Sure. Small town, you know, right in between Winston-Salem and Greensboro. I was born in Greensboro. We moved to Kernersville because my mother was a real estate agent. And, you know, with my father being on the road a lot, I think they liked the idea of being in a smaller community and still, you know, quite accessible to the other kind of larger areas around us. But it was neat. You know, it was a really wonderful place to grow up. Grew up in a house where food was just tremendously important. Both my parents are fantastic cooks. I still call them with questions and to pick their brain on certain, you know, food subjects. But grew up, my father had two just beautiful organic vegetable gardens, which I didn't see a lot of in my neighbor's properties at the time. So it was really, you know, a neat thing for us. And just grew up being a part of that, you know, working in the gardens and watching food from its, you know, beginnings and to see how that made its way into our kitchen and then onto our preservation shelves. And yeah, so really, really for me, just a really wonderful way to grow up, and certainly has a lot to do with my connection to the food world now.
Your father was a beekeeper too?
He was a hobbyist beekeeper. And, you know, we grew up very healthy when I was a child and didn't eat any sugar. Everything was, you know, honey that my father had raised, which is a wonderful thing, I think. And yeah, so grew up seeing not just enjoying, you know, the fruits of that labor, but also seeing that process and understanding, you know, the importance of the bee, which I think is a really big deal.
Sometimes when you grow up like that, it never occurs to you that this could be a profession. I mean, had you begun thinking about this as a profession, that you wanted to get into food?
I really hadn't. And yeah. I moved to Raleigh the day after my 18th birthday to go to school at NC State. And I heard a term recently. It was college educated, just not college graduated, which is my true in my case. So, but when I went off to school, you know, I think it was, you know, let me back up and also say part of that childhood was not just, you know, raising food and cooking it, but my parents had a real love for entertaining and sharing that stuff with their friends, which were a really large group of folks. And, you know, as a child, you sort of grow up with this sort of hip height view of all that. And it's really amazing because you're sort of in your own space, but you've got this great view of this wonderful exchange happening around you. So grew up with, you know, watching people have a great time around food and to see food and music and I don't know if it was good wine, but there was wine and see that connecting people. And so when I went off to school, you know, I took a real interest in food and it hadn't really, you know, popped in my head yet that part of that was because that was a piece of my family. You know, that was a piece of what I grew up with and part of my comfort and part of, as I would later realize, who I am, you know. And so I started reading a lot about food and buying a lot of books and sort of as an 18 and 19 year old, you know, investing in things for my kitchen, which, you know, started a, you know, a little apartment kitchen and went on to be another little apartment kitchen.
So, I mean, is this because you really missed that home cooking? I mean, you got away and you realized, oh, wait, this doesn't just happen. You have to make this good food. Because growing up around it, you just don't realize.
Sure. You know, right? I think as a college kid, you know, it suddenly stood out very quickly that, wow, I was eating really great food. Yeah. You know, so I started reading a little bit and cooking and teaching myself and then started making, you know, this whole new group of friends, of course, as you do when you go to school. And that's, I think, one of your first opportunities to have a lot of kind of older friends. And so started throwing dinner parties. And that became my sort of platform for taking this knowledge that I was seeking and being able to share it with folks. And taught myself a lot in that period of time and would always sort of challenge myself to learn to cook something that I wasn't familiar with. And so I'd read about it and go out and, you know, a lot of the ingredients I was familiar with, there were just some new combinations for me.
So what kind of things were you cooking?
Oh, you know, all kinds of stuff. I think there were some things that I would go back and look at what my father would do, which were things like great eggplant parmesan and great, you know, just fresh vegetable dishes and so a lot of classic things. My father.
Well, let me stop you there because eggplant parmesan for one. So it's one thing to read the ingredients, understand, and say, oh, I'm going to go look for that turmeric and see where I can find that and put it in my and see what it does to my rice. But it's quite another to actually get the oil to the right temperature to get the eggplant cooked crisp and, you know, just about right. So that's a technique thing, right?
Yeah.
You got to do a lot of bad eggplant before you get your good one? Or
well, and I think, you know, I think a lot of that stuff, because of growing up around it for so long, I think a lot of that stuff came to me a little more naturally, you know. And so there were things, whether I ever thought about it or not, that just made sense to me when I would read something. I think it probably, you know, triggered for me in a way that was different than someone who had never spent a lot of time around food. So yeah, you know, start throwing these dinner parties and same things are there, you know, great music and great food and friends coming in and bringing some fun wine or beer and having this group together. And I think, you know, I didn't really realize it at the time until talking about it later, you know, and years later, that so much of what I had fallen in love with was not just cooking and not just food, though I was connecting with that. It was a big part of that same thing that I'd grown up around, and it was entertaining. And that became something that to me is tremendously important and of, you know, equal importance with the food that I'm learning about and cooking and everything that's a part of that.
You worked at Humble Pie in Raleigh for a while,
I did,
right? And
yes.
Then was that was the first place you wrote a menu?
That was right? Actually, it was the first place that I wrote a dinner menu and really, I was very young at the time, and I sort of laugh. Sometimes I'll come across those menus and look at some of the combinations, and it tickles me a little bit. But still, it was, you know, we were having a great time, and we were cooking great food and learning a lot in the process.
What were some of those combinations?
You
flushed them
I'm
from
sure
your
there
memory.
Were some tortilla-crusted chicken dishes and things that now.
What did you learn there? What was it like to work at a place like that and not in your own place?
You know, it's what I learned there or some of the things that I'm proudest of are, you know, I learned a lot about management and taking perception and figuring out how to do the right things with it and to take a community and a staff to, you know, a new place. And so Humble Pie was this really classic, interesting restaurant in downtown. There were a couple of kind of old hippies who owned it who wanted to, A, do things exactly how they always wanted to do them, and then also to, you know, use great ingredients, use great local organic stuff. And they were making great food and had a really interesting body of folks working in the restaurant. But it was, you know, it was a place where the owner, Grover Williamson, who I think has been an important person to a lot of folks in downtown Raleigh, he's kind of an old rock and roll guy. He had this really interesting old warehouse that had become really important to Raleigh, and he had some special things that he did, like his favorite number was 17, so the restaurant opened at 6:17 every night. And they didn't take credit cards, and so, you know, this was an interesting time where hospitality was really coming forward in a lot of, you know, places in the area, and people were now experiencing what it really felt like to be taken care of, so it which I think is so important in restaurants.
What year would this be about? When?
Let's see. This would have been in 98.
And Raleigh itself is in transition at the
time,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. So I challenged myself to find a way to still express all the beautiful things about this business, but in a way that created a better business format. Yeah. So to say, hey, you know, maybe we should start with opening at 6 p.m. And maybe we should revisit this credit card idea, you know. And right. So we did all those things, right. And he was really wonderful to trust me, and they all proved to be quite successful. But at the same time, we kept the spirit of this really organic and unique offering in downtown Raleigh. We kept that alive.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear you talk about the way this hybrid then comes alive, to take this highly idiosyncratic and perhaps maybe not as successful in the long run model and make it successful without losing the vision.
Exactly.
You also then decided that maybe there was more you needed to learn about the world of food and decided to learn from none other than Andrea Reusing.
Yes, that maybe is a definite. There's definitely a lot for me to learn, and I'm very happy to say there still is. Andrea had opened Enoteca Vin in the Glenwood South area of Raleigh, and it was a really beautiful project. She was doing something that was very unique to Raleigh, I say at the time, and I still believe, you know, that would stand up as a very unique restaurant at this, you know, to date. So, but she, you know, one of my favorite things about Andrea at that time and still to this day is just what a beautiful job she does with relationships and the growing community. And so in Raleigh, you know, I hadn't had that exposure that of those relationships that she was, you know, celebrating each day. And so we came to meet each other.
When you say great, not the growing community, but the growing farmers, right?
Yes, that's what you mean. Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm sorry, yes. So I always like to use the example that, you know, in that kitchen, there was a, you know, if rabbit was on the menu, there was a guy who the day that, you know, the rabbit was slaughtered, he was bringing it to the restaurant wearing his apron, and he was the guy, you know. And
in so that Wellington boots with it.
Exactly. Yeah. So this is, you know, one small example of, you know, she had, you know, 20 plus relationships like that. And you saw those people coming in and out of that restaurant, and you certainly tasted it in the food. And so it was a new experience for me. And I asked her if I could come to work there a couple of days a week and just to have that experience of working from the inside and seeing how those relationships were cultivated and exercised within the restaurant and, you know, as an art and as a business.
And so you kind of traded time for lessons, did you?
I did. I asked, you know, I was doing a little bit of catering on my own, which allowed me to pay my bills at the time. And I asked Andrea if we could barter, and so that I would have the opportunity not just to work under her guidance in the kitchen and to see sort of how she was thinking about food and executing food, but also to be paid in a trade tab that I could then sit at that bar and experience that food and that style of dining, which I, you know, quite fell in love with. And also, you know, it was a wonderful wine program, and it was a place where they had 50 wines by the glass, which is, I think, I would say still a pretty unique offering in the area, if not anywhere in the country. So to be able to sit there and try these great wines and learn about food and wine combinations was a real gift for me. I really enjoyed it.
You started working with somebody named Scott Howell.
Tell us about Scott Howell, who has been a tremendous, much like Andrea, you know, we worked together for sort of a short period of time. I worked for Andrea for under a year, and she left to open Lantern. And when she left to do that, you know, luck, thank goodness she did, because what a cool project.
Yeah, in so Chapel Hill, right.
We certainly missed her, but man, what a wonderful exchange that has been. So, but I, after Andrea left, I had a relationship, a friendship with her brother, who was working, had left while Andrew was working on Lantern. He was working with Scott Howell at Nana's in Durham, which I can't express enough what an important restaurant that is for the number of cooks and business folks who have come through those doors. But so Scott is a, you know, classically educated. He's a CIA graduate who has worked all over the world and spent an extended period in New York City working for great folks, and has for now decades owned projects in here in Durham. And so I wanted to go to work for Scott, really craving that really structured education that I knew I would have access to in that kitchen.
So you worked with him, and that's where you learned how to cut fish.
Yeah, you know, when I went to work for Scott, he asked me, which I think is a really generous question. You know, there are lots of things to accomplish in a restaurant like that, and to look at your staff and say, what can I do for you? You know, he said, you're coming here to learn. What do you want to learn? And I had worked in a lot of small restaurants, and Nana's was much larger than any place I'd worked in before as far as the volume that they saw and the number of items on the menu. So I'm sure you know, Scott is, I don't know if Scott regards himself as so, but he's a fish man. I mean, he's always got such a great selection of seafood on the menu and lots of it. And that always stood out to me. And I wanted to, you know, I asked him, I said, I'd really like to get good at cutting fish. And so he just said, you know, kind of smiled and said, remember that you asked for that.
Wow.
So
now I fillet fish, and and that's not hard, but apparently not hard to me, but
right.
but this is beyond that, because you've got to get it cut in different shapes and forms, lots of little bones. Is that the
you're getting in, you know, at a minimum at that time, there were three different fish on the menu that were coming in fresh from the coast, different guys bringing them in, which again is another great example of those relationships and watching. He had a really, you know, wonderful selection of different folks that he worked with for all the great things in that restaurant. But the seafood program was outstanding, and there'd be just hundreds of pounds of fish coming in every day.
Wow.
And so to get to work with different things and to know that knowing how to cut a fish, there's no such thing. There are so many different types of fish and different ways to think about it. And so I had a great time seeing that with him.
I tell you what, we're going to take a break now, and then we're going to figure out or find out how chive chopping played a role in your learning to cut fish.
Sure.
Who can't come back for that? Ashley Christensen, my guest, the chef at Pool's Diner in Raleigh, a finalist for the James Beard Award. Got some other restaurants in Raleigh as well, and some more on the way. We'll talk about all of it when our conversation continues on The State of Things. Stay with us. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stasio, talking with Ashley Christensen, chef in Raleigh, up for the James Beard Award for Best Chef in the Southeast, and talked about working with Scott Howell at Nana's and teaching you how to cut fish, but you had to audition first. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I went and scored a trail, as we call it, the opportunity to come in and hang out on the line and cook, and generally you're given some small task that you know illustrates your level of experience and attention to detail, et cetera. And at that point, I'd worked for myself a lot, and as we discussed before, had just spent some time in Andrea Rusing's kitchen in Raleigh at the time. And one thing that I always sort of looked for were what the people beside of me were doing. And so if I saw someone who was cutting something a particular way, or I could ask a question about something. I asked a lot of questions, and if someone showed me a technique, I made a point, you know, having not been to culinary school, I made a point to just practice any technique that I saw. Anytime I cut an onion, I would try and cut it perfectly every time, even if it were for stock, you know, whatever it was, just to really, you know, train my hands through those motions and to get really comfortable with it. And it's something that helped me to develop an appreciation for detail, which I have a great appreciation for. But as I was trailing in the kitchen, Scott is very particular about a lot of details, and you definitely taste that in the beauty of his food. And he had asked me to cut some chives. And I think it's become one of my favorite sort of gauges of detail as well.
To cut chives?
Cut some chives. I want them just, you know, I want you to cut them just like this, this big. I don't want to hear you cutting them. I want the knife to go through so perfectly you don't hear a sound. And I thought, oh, I've been working on this. This is great.
luckily, you had been practicing your chive chopping.
So I cut my chives and then go through the rest of this shift, have a great time in this kitchen. So much to see from the food they're making to the design of the kitchen and just how it's run. And at the end of the day, I sit down and talk with Scott, which I'm a little bit nervous about at the time. He's, you know, one of my heroes at the time and still is. But so we sit and talk, and I, you know, we talk about the kitchen, and I finally he says something about the next time I'm going to be there. And I said, well, are you telling me that I have a job here? And he said, of course you have a job here. You know, people so rarely walk in this kitchen and never cut chives perfectly the way I want them, which I thought was great.
He said, so, you cut your chives perfectly.
Yeah. And I don't know how, you know,
what does that mean? Seriously, you know, to a guy, you know, who just chops his chives, and forgive me, but what does that mean?
If you're taking care of your knives and you've got a good sharp edge, and you're working with beautiful chives. And I think that's something that, you know, that's the point. It's not just about the chive. It's about respecting. Yeah. It's respecting the guy who grew those chives, or, you know, and also thinking about, you know, those details are a big deal, because when you're cutting something, that's the reason your knife is sharp, is so that you're making a perfect slice through something and you're not chopping it up and bruising it. And that's why, you know, in these restaurants where detail is a big deal, that's why you're noticing the way things are cut and the way they interact with one another. And chives, I think, are just a great example of that. But my thing has always been the shallot. And that's always where we start people, and, you know, teaching them to perfectly mince shallots for that reason, to, you know, that it should be a complement to, you know, the dish that it's going into, and it should be at its best. So to not bruise something, you know, that has been grown and brought to you, and instead to cut it in a way that celebrates exactly what it is and lets it complement whatever dish you're putting it into.
So how much did it have to do? So it strikes me that what you're saying is this had less to do with what the chive might look like when you're finished than him watching you chop the chive.
Sure, you're doing.
And there's a Zen-like story. I think there's a Zen story that talks about the sharpened knife, and a good chef may sharpen his knife once a month, an excellent chef once a year, and the master would never have to resharpen them.
Right? That's great.
You become one. So he's watching you, how you cut the chive, not how the chive ends up.
Sure. I mean, I think both are important.
So now let's talk about some of your other restaurants, because then you've got three restaurants, or three places, I guess, that share a kitchen. Is that right?
I do, yeah. So opened up some restaurants about a year and three quarters ago now. The first one opened up in August 2 years ago. And the first is sort of the anchoring project there is Beasley's, our fried chicken and honey restaurant, which is something that I have just a longstanding connection with. My mother is an incredible Southern cook, and I grew up, she would fry chicken. My father, being a hobbyist beekeeper, that was always what we complemented it with, was this, you know, just beautiful honey. And so it's this sort of salty sweet. I always reference it as like the popcorn chocolate theory. The reason those things are so delicious together is you've got something, you know, rich and crispy and sweet, and then, rich and crispy, a little salty, and then this drizzle of beautiful honey. And so it's always been something that I've really enjoyed. And
And the name itself, Beasley's, goes back to your childhood too, right?
It does. I don't have a middle name. And when I was a child, I would be, you know, throwing a fit about something, as children often do. My mother would sort of razz me by calling me, you know, she would say, oh, you look just like a little old lady. You look just like Miss Beasley, which is, of course, the character from Family Affair.
Oh, yeah.
And so she always teased me. Of course, that just made me more mad. But it stuck. And so she still, you know, over the years, she would call me Beezy. Uh-huh. And so it's one of those things as a kid, you're like, don't call me that in front of people. And then as you get a little bit older, you come to really embrace those old stories and appreciate them more. But I often tell people about when we first opened pools, and I was pretty hard to get in touch with because just so busy and working so much. And my mother was trying to call me, and I hadn't returned her call. So she called the restaurant and left a message. And I have the host to come back and say, someone called and asked for Beasley. I think it might have been your mom. I don't know who that is, but it's like, oh.
Got to take that one. So
at that point, I realized it was with me for life, and of course, came to embrace that through the project.
Fox's Cocktail. What's the story behind that?
The Cocktail Lounge is a just craft cocktail bar. It's the building is an old Piggly Wiggly. And I was looking at maybe one or two bays in there. And my friend David Meeker owns the building. And he's someone who I really enjoyed the idea of working with in that tenant and landlord relationship idea. And started looking at the project and ended up falling in love with the whole space. And so it was a Piggly Wiggly at the time when the footprint of a grocery store was smaller. So it's about 4,500 square feet, the actual footprint, and it's also has a basement level. So Fox is in the basement of this building. It's on a corner, so you access it from the Martin Street side. And it's really neat. It's, you know, we kept the walls just as they were and sort of built a beautiful bar in the center, craft cocktail bar. But I named it for my father and his nickname from the time he was young, because he was a darn good-looking fella and still is, has always been Fox. And so I just felt like it was a really neat – there's something great about that. I love that it's – you know, my parents are divorced now, and they're still great friends, and my mother still calls him Fox, which I love. And so I named this bar for him.
What does he think of that?
He loves it. I get a kick out of, again, when we were opening this project, I was just – super busy, and he had been calling me, and we're very close, and we talk quite a bit. And he finally got me on the phone and sort of had that short tone that parents sometimes have when they're upset with their children. Well, how are you? What have you been up to? You know, I said, explaining to him, been working on this project, developing, you know, these three different identities, and you know, we're in the phase of building it. And I start telling him about it, and I say, you know, well, decided to, you know, to call the bar Fox Liquor Bar. And he sort of, I hear him like, hear just like a little gesture of delight on the other end of the phone. He says, wow, you know, not only I thought you weren't talking to me because you're upset with me, and not only are you not mad at me, but you named a bar after me.
So all's forgiven. Well, and we should point out that you're opening three restaurants essentially, or establishments, yes, all at the same time.
Yeah.
That's wacky.
It was wacky, but it was just one of those opportunities where I had walked past this building that had been empty for several years now. And when I first moved to Raleigh, it was a place called Jimmy's Market, and everybody knew Jimmy's Market, and just a little grocery store in downtown. And then we saw this sort of void for grocery stores in downtown, which is starting to be fulfilled a little bit with some just little convenience stores popping up. And I'm sure someone's got to be working on an interesting grocery project before too long. But I just always loved the space, and just thought, man, what a neat place that would be to open a restaurant. So when this opportunity came about and we looked at some different ways we could utilize it, it just became clear that we needed to be in the whole space. And so, you know, we started with the anchoring concept of Beasley's. The next two, Fox and Chuck's, which is our burger joint, opened about 3 weeks later. And we connect them by a kitchen that is shared in the back. And so we're able to build a really beautiful high-powered kitchen, which this is my first project that is 7 days and seven nights. And so there's a lot to that. And it takes a lot of obviously labor, but also mechanical support to work around the clock like that. So we built a really high-powered, great kitchen, and I think a really pretty kitchen for folks to work in, given that they're going to be spending that much time in one place together. So we're very proud of that. And it's gets, you know, we learn something every day about how to make it more efficient, yeah, and how to make it make more sense. But all in all, the concept has worked very well.
I can't let you go without talking about your experience on Iron Chef. here's a clip from that. Let's listen.
So this is our final course. We wanted to step outside of the box and try a salmon dessert. This is made from the skin of the salmon. It's a salmon skin beignet.
It's delicious. Love the pineapple, the honey, beignet.
As a dish unto itself, it's awesome. I love it.
Excellent.
If salmon is what we're here to talk about, maybe you could have pushed it a little bit further so we would have gotten just a little more of that skin flavor.
I wanted it to be like a successful dessert course that you would actually eat for dessert.
I'm impressed that you were able to pull this off.
Excellent. Thank you.
Somebody wants their donut to taste more like salmon? What is that? That's very cool. Actually, how do you keep your cool? Because it's like that. It's like, nah, pal, this is dessert, you know? We don't want it to taste like salmon skin.
Yeah, it was funny. We had a viewing party for that we made a benefit for the Frankie Lemon Foundation. And it was a great time. We did it at King's downtown, which is one of our favorite spots and good friends of ours. So we had this, you know, this is the first time I've seen it too, which was a lot of fun. But watching that and remembering that feeling of standing there and talking about your food, you know, it's such a funny format. You've got Jeffrey Steingarten, who's, you know, a really interesting food personality. And then you've got like an actress. And then you've got, you know, another gentleman who has a seafood project. And so you're wanting to share what it is that you've made. And then you're having to be really defensive about why it isn't the way they want it to be. But yeah, so we went out on a limb and thought, man, if the ingredient is going to be salmon, we're going to maximize this. And, you know, I felt like that should have been part of making a dessert as part of a meal. And so that should have been part of the challenge. And we thought, you know, we thought that was a great idea, and it was really funny when we gave that sort of rebuttal of, you know, wanted to make a dessert that people would eat. Our whole crowd went, and we have King's packed, and the crowd just goes crazy. And it was like, you know, maybe we didn't win, but that was a great moment for our team.
You know? Have you ever made the salmon beignet again?
I have not. No, and I'll be honest with you, Frank, I probably never will.
Okay. Well, that was a great try.
But it was fun.
And you've got a couple more restaurants coming, huh?
Yeah, we got a few things we're working on that we're really excited about. We have some folks that we respect very much in downtown Raleigh who had a project called the Wilmore Cafe, and we purchased that in January of this year, and we are opening up a coffee shop with sort of an extensive offering of food day and night. So hoping to create another 7-day space where we can be a part of. You know, I think coffee shop is a place where you want to really be there for the community. And so we're looking forward to sharing that. And we've just hired a barista who's moving down from New York City a week from today, actually. And so we'll be charging ahead on that project. And we're really excited to share it. And then we've got we're working on a project that's within 5 blocks of all of our other projects. Yeah. It's a beautiful old building in downtown Raleigh. We're finishing up the lease right now on that project. But have done quite a bit of development for the concepts. The building itself has been a bank and a funeral home, which is really interesting. Uh-huh. And we are working on a concept that we're calling, out of respect for its original use, Death and Taxes.
Excellent.
And that's going to be a wood fire oven concept, roasting meats and seafood and vegetables based on Southern ingredients. We're also working on an event space on the 2 floors above that, which is really exciting for us because, you know, as we have touched on community so many times, every now and then we have to close a restaurant down for a private event for a great cause or guests who have been just tremendous supporters for us. And but we really hate doing that. You know, we hate saying these are our hours and we want to be there for our community and then shutting down. So, you know, the event space is going to be a great business for us, but it also gives us the opportunity to share the different things that we do with folks who want to be a part of that without closing down restaurants.
Great fun. Ashley, thanks so much. Good to talk with
you. Thank you.
Ashley Christensen, chef in Raleigh, runs restaurants like Pool's Downtown Diner, Beasley's Chicken and Honey, Fox's Liquor Bar and Chuck's, and also a finalist for the James Beard Award, Best Chef in the Southeast. This is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.